It's Wednesday, October 14th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 166 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
And my name is Pat.
So, we were introduced to a new website by one of our forum users that I've been slowly checking out over the past couple days. It started off with he linked something they had done about Twilight. And we, sitting here before the recording, started going through some of their other reviews to see if the Twilight one was an anomaly or all of their reviews are really that good. And the website is spill.com, like spilling milk. It's SPILL.com. And I'll link this in the show notes. Not that they probably need a plug from us, but we may be big fish in a little pond, but they're bigger fish in a bigger pond.
Yeah. Or maybe they're nobody. Maybe they've been doing this for a year and nobody's heard of them yet.
I don't know. I look at the number of comments on some of their films. They seem to be attracting somebody.
Oh, good. Because they deserve it. They're funny as hell. And they give good reviews.
Well, and that's the thing that I have to give them credit for is what we were watching is that they do movie reviews where they apparently record an audio podcast and then overlay it with a flash animation. It's not, per se, a video show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does have video, but it's not video in the sense it's not recorded live. But they review movies. And I can take somebody like Yahtzee, who's funny as hell. I mean, his material is hysterical. Of course, he does video games, not movies. But I really don't walk away with any more of an educated opinion than I came in with. Yeah. I mean, I've laughed my ass off. And I love what he does, even when I completely disagree with him.
Well, the guy's full of hatred and anger and...
Well, that's his shtick.
That's his thing.
That's his persona.
Yahtzee personifies one of the biggest complaints I have about reviews, or reviewers in general, is that generally they seem to think they're being paid to hate something. They feel like they have to be overcritical of absolutely everything.
Well, we'll come back to that thought because I agree with you. We'll come back to that thought. But then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have people like your newspaper reviewers who take their craft so seriously that...
only the art house flicks get thumbs up?
Yeah, exactly. And so there's no comedy to it. There's nothing entertaining about the review itself. It's typically just a highly opinionated diatribe.
I find the opposite is true of newspaper reviewers. I think that the newspaper reviewers, what they like and don't like, I have no idea. But what they're trying to do is instead of saying, this is what I liked about the movie, this is what I didn't like about the movie, or this is what the director, actor, producer, writer, whatever, was trying to put forward, and this is how audiences are going to interpret it, or maybe you're this kind of moviegoer, you're not going to like Twilight. If you're a 30-year-old man who's not into vampires, you're not going to like Twilight and that sort of thing. They don't do that. They try to write comedy pieces. They try to make their review more creative than the movie they're reviewing. Almost to the point of where it's like they're waiting for someone to review their review and give them points and thumbs up on it. I'm kind of split on that. On one hand, I don't like it because I want to be told the facts, just the facts. I want to be told, do you think the movie's good or bad? Why do you think the movie's good or bad? What were they trying to do in the movie without spoilers? But then on the other hand, I really enjoy being entertained. And I read movie reviews out of papers and websites and stuff because they of themselves are entertaining. When they gush and love a film and they go on and on about how wonderful it is, I like reading it. And when they just totally tear down and destroy a film, they do it in clever ways.
You know, I have no problem tackling this topic on Fear the Boot because of the fact that I admit it's something that's very hard to do, which is writing reviews. Mm-hmm. There is a reason why Fear the Boot, since day one. Now, sure, we've mentioned products we like and products we don't like, but this has never been a show about the products. We don't give you gaming industry news. We don't tell you about the new stuff coming out. We don't even, outside of our own gaming stories, really go in depth about the old stuff. And some people presume this is because we don't know about the products or haven't talked to the writers. And in many cases, that's outright false. But we don't talk about it because we are a concept-driven show. Making a good character or a good plot or not being a jerk as a GM is the same in D&D, first edition, second edition, 3, 3.5, 4, Pathfinder. It doesn't matter.
And I think that information is a lot more useful than a review, to be honest.
Well, I think both are useful. Because
when you present that kind of information, you can get a roundtable discussion. about it. You know, you can really, I guess you could do the same thing for like a movie review or role-playing game review, but you explore an idea and you build on the different ideas. Whereas a review is, I have my opinion and I can present my opinion in humorous and funny and thought-provoking ways with a review.
One of the things that I think makes a good review, and a lot of reviewers cannot do this, and in my reviews that I've messed with on the blog, I've kind of tried to do this, and I don't think I really succeeded at it, to be completely honest. Internally, I can divide things into three categories. Good, bad, and not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can separate that there are things out there that are fantastic products, even though I personally hate them. I think a lot of reviewers cannot do that. If I was hired tomorrow to write reviews for somebody, be it role-playing games, video games, movies, one of the things that I would really strive to do is not just to say, here's what's good, here's what's bad, but to try and say, you will probably like this if you also like, and you will probably not like this if you also don't like. And I realize that's more of an art than a science, because people like and dislike things for really, really weird reasons. There may be a movie that, according to your archetype, fits everything you love, but there's one actor in there you can't stand, and that destroys the movie for you.
There's also movies that you just know are bad that you love. I have a list of movies like that for me that I know they're bad movies, but I'm going to enjoy watching them anyway.
Well, and then there's also target demographics, too. The Hannah Montana movie, nobody here is in that target demographic.
But could you go see...
for all the wrong reasons.
Could you go see a Hannah Montana or a High School Musical or Bring It On type movie and separate the good from the bad, excepting you'll probably hate all of them?
Well,
but separate, if you're into that, this is the one you ought to go see.
Yes, I can, for a reason. That I believe that there are standards in a movie of good and bad and mediocrity. And that you can look at any movie, and if you kind of understand how movies are made, and you kind of understand that bad acting is bad acting. Flat line delivery, no character, no charisma on the screen is bad acting. Whether it's in a Hannah Montana movie or whether it's in whatever Quentin Tarantino's latest art house film is.
And I would disagree with that.
I can come up with one exception, at least on top of my head. I just saw Surrogates. Very mediocre movie, in my opinion. I won't go into why, because we're reviewing reviews, not giving reviews. But there were scenes in the movie where he was talking to robots, and granted, they're controlled by humans. And I believe, and somebody who's more cynical than I may disagree with this, but I believe the acting was bad intentionally.
Yes.
Because they were trying to show a disconnect between the humans and reality.
And thus that makes for good acting because they were trying to achieve an ultimate goal within
the
actor.
Fair enough. So maybe the bad acting actually was good acting.
My argument here, though, is that charisma is something that's based on opinion. Whether someone's flat or not, I think is based on opinion. Where you may look at something and say, this is bad acting, this is flat acting, there's no charisma, this is a poor performance. Someone else could look at that and say, that was amazing, I'm impressed.
I think
it's all subjective.
I think that there are shades of gray within that, but, you know, I think that there's a difference between looking at the quality of something and enjoying it. There can be something that is incredibly high quality that I might not enjoy. Hannah Montana movie. I mean, that's the perfect straw man here because nobody here is interested in that.
I've seen it and I like it.
Now, Wayne, careful where you go from here. Puppy. She's not 18 yet.
Is the Hannah Montana music good? I can't say because I've actually never listened to any of it, but we'll just for the sake of argument assume
that
it's
some of her songs. In all fairness,
the movie is a bad movie. Yeah, I enjoyed
it. But you enjoyed it.
It is a bad movie.
And there's a difference between your enjoyment and the quality of the movie. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I love some really stinking bad movies.
I think a lot of people will say there's something wrong with my enjoyment of the movie. I expect to get comments about that one.
For me, a good review of a movie is going to be very basic. It's going to be, you know, is it an entertaining film? Is it something that you can go into and just enjoy it and lose yourself in the story that it's telling? I don't need to know the semantics of, well, literarily it wasn't this or some hoity-toity reason that a lot of reviewers will get into. And that's where you're talking about the quality.
Yeah,
and you're talking about that
reviews,
now. Now, there are some people, because I wonder how many people actually out there say, look to reviews seriously about deciding whether or not they're going to go see a movie. I think the bulk of people don't. They probably rely on what they see, the trailers, et cetera, et cetera. So for me,
of people do rely on reviews, but it's going to be reviews from friends and trusted sources, from a newspaper.
And that's, for me, that's the better kind of review. What's a good for review? Listen to what your friends that have seen it are saying.
I say, I loved the Edward Norton Incredible Hulk. I went out and saw it. I was very surprised. I'm not an Incredible Hulk fan at all.
Mm-hmm. And the original was so horrible.
The original was horrible. Yeah. I had no interest in seeing this movie until three or four different friends came back to me and said, dude, seriously, this is an unexpected hit. This movie's actually really good. And I'm like, nah, there's no way. It's crap. I don't care about Incredible Hulk.
That's the same reason I watched it, because I hated the first one so much. It was on my list of worst movies ever. That I didn't even give this one a chance until the same thing you said. Two or three people said, I just saw this. You really need to give it a chance.
You know, Wayne and I are very lucky because we have a friend at work. Jimmy, he loves anything. If it is a movie, that is the only criteria for him to enjoy it and like it and tell you how wonderful it is.
Pretty much,
But what that means is when he comes to you and says, hey, movie X, stunk, I hated it, it was the worst thing I saw, you are blown away.
Yeah, he came in one day and said,
you know that movie is bad.
He came in one day and said, don't watch Aeon Flux. I'm like, what?
Whoa.
You didn't like something?
That's amazing.
You know what does it for me? When I
read, but we can't talk about that on the show.
I'm talking about in terms of reviews.
We already talked about Tana.
That's right, yeah.
It's a review that doesn't tell you what, but tells you why. Because when you get a reviewer who just says, this was great or this sucked, that really tells me nothing other than their experience with it.
I completely agree with
that. I want them to tell me is why. I like this movie.
Why without spoilers?
Without spoilers.
That's the hard one.
And that's not easy. For a role-playing game or video game, well, maybe not a video game. I guess for a role-playing game, that's easy because you're talking about system and setting. There's nothing to spoil, but for a plot-driven thing like a video game or movie, that's
really hard. But there's hooks and surprises and reveals.
What why allows me to do is to look at what they're saying and say, I'm going to like this movie. Mm-hmm. For example, I remember reading reviews of Batman Begins before it came out, and there were some guys that were complaining about it. I don't remember who the reviewers were. And their complaint was, this is the Dark Knight. And this was prior to the movie called The Dark Knight. But this is the Dark Knight, not the Caped Crusader. And they were bent out of shape that it wasn't campy enough. It was too dark.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
oh, perfect.
Perfect. And all of a sudden, I could read past the review and suddenly get a real sense of what the movie was like because they explained why. They didn't just say the movie sucked and stopped.
You can get that with friends, too. If someone if Chad comes to me and said, I don't like this movie because it's too campy, I know he doesn't like camp. I do like camp. So there's a chance that I may end up liking that movie.
And because
of everything he tells me that's wrong with it, that may actually get me excited about
it. And Wayne and I are good friends, and I know what he likes in camp or what he likes in this and that movie, and I can say, I didn't like the movie because it had this campy element in it, but it was an element like this. And I think you'll like it. You should check it out.
Yeah, on the same lines, I come in and say, I absolutely love this movie. You would hate it.
Yeah.
We do that a lot.
I want to quickly touch back on a topic from last show, and I'm going to take this in a new direction, but it's going to start from a continuation of something we talked about in our last show.
About how bacon is the best thing ever.
I don't think we talked about that last week,
didn't,
but we should have.
We should have. I mean, if we didn't, we made a grievous error.
It's true. It's absolutely true. I mean, if you don't believe in an all-loving God, you need to look no further than zingers and bacon.
Indeed.
And
zinger. Take a zinger, wrap it in bacon, bread it, deep fry it, put on a stick.
I'm sure they serve
submit
it in Scotland.
This is why you're fat.com.
That's right.
But we were talking about LARPing.
Pat, you're shaking your head. You heathen.
No, I think it's great. I'm just thinking about our poor Jewish brethren out there who wouldn't be able to eat it.
Yes.
We were talking about LARPing, and one of the things that I said in the last episode was that as far as I was concerned, the primary difference between a LARP game and a non-LARP game was public perception versus rules. Well, a bunch of people came back on the forums and said, that's not true. While that may be true for some games.
But it is true. We said it on Fear the Boot.
Well, there are rules, for example, that White Wolf puts out specifically for LARPing. Now, Chad, you actually mentioned the name of it, though you did so in a different context, which is Mind's Eye Theater.
Yeah, I thought that was a theater group.
Yeah, and that's actually the name of the rule system. I did a little reading on Mind's Eye Theater.
Are they a theater group in any way, or did I totally blow that
one? I think
one?
You completely made that up.
Cool.
Now, there might be a theater group who uses Mind's Eye Theater to do their improv routine. Mm. So there may be some run over
there. You know, now that I think about it, I think I found a Mind's Eye Theater book, and flipping through it, I think I saw they had photographs of people in costume LARPing, and then I kind of made this correlation without actually reading the text.
Are you saying you don't know everything about LARPing?
But as I was looking at this Mind's Eye Theater stuff, in the original version, that had the paper, scissors, rock. And I came to find out this has names like throwing chops and hand jamming. There's a bunch of slang terms for it. They're kind of weird.
I like hand jamming.
I know that you can put your arms across your chest and sort of across, and supposedly, in the wacky parlance of LARPers, that's the sign of invisibility.
Oh.
And I had a friend who went to a convention where there's this huge LARP going on, and he was just there for board game. He was actually a Risk player. This is Neil, actually. And he played Risk almost competitively, and he's like, I played D&D for years. These people are freaks. And so, they kept doing this audience participation thing. It wasn't that they were LARPing within the crowd. They kept trying to bring the mundanes into it, and somebody told him, it's like, hey, man, just cross your arms over your chest. Like this, like you can all see through the microphone. And that means that you're invisible in their thing. And he said he walked around the whole con like this, and all the LARPers left him alone.
To explain the hand motion Chad's doing, for anyone that's ever seen a typical Dracula film, how Dracula sleeps with his arms crossed such that his hands are on opposing shoulders. That's the pose
this
he's doing.
Pose symbol. Yeah.
All right, but anyway, so I started looking at this Mind's Eye Theater thing and came to find out that in its original version, it used paper, scissors, rock. In its current version, apparently you carry around playing cards, an ace through a 10, that basically serves like a D10. Mm-hmm. And there were two things that this made me realize. First of all, reading the rules for the current Mind's Eye Theater, while you're using playing cards instead of a D10, and you're using one D10...
Where'd you find the rules at?
I'm not going to say. Using one D10 as opposed to multiple D10s, which is how the tabletop game plays, the rules were still, honestly, just as complex as many rules-light RPGs. Mm-hmm. It really, to me, I did not see anything in there that just screamed to me, this is radically different than a tabletop RPG, assuming we're talking about a super rules-light one. If you can take this on the go, basically swapping playing cards for a D10, take the ace through 6 and you've got a D6. Take the ace through 4, you've got a D4. You could take any role-playing game on the go like this. But that's not my main point. The bigger point is I am someone who has spent more than two decades of my life, playing role-playing games. I've looked through catalogs. I've gone to conventions. I've gone to many, many different gaming stores. I've interacted with tons of different gamers. I am good associates with and in good rapport with multiple people that work for White Wolf. And typically any convention I go to, I seek out the White Wolf booth to talk to a couple of those guys. Usually end up getting some free products out of it. I look over their current offerings. The point is, all jokes about Fear the Boot being stuck in FASA aside.
Apparently we're stuck in White Wolf.
Yeah. Strangely, it's probably closer to the truth. We don't talk about them that often.
And you know what? We still cannot play a White Wolf game and it's in a group.
Because of one, I know. But point being that I have had all these opportunities. And as we said in the last episode, we played a LARP. Skies of Glass was originally played as a LARP. I had never even heard of these rules until people started mentioning it on the forums. I don't want to say that anyone's, quote unquote, to blame for my education regarding role-playing games, or in this case,
not their
LARPs.
Responsibility.
But here's my thing. Maybe it is. I mean, maybe not the responsibility of the players, but, well, maybe it is. Let's look at it this way. If you have players who want to evangelize and proselytize their hobby, which role players of any kind in general love to do, and you have companies who, in order to sell you something, first have to explain to you what it is, have to show you what it is. How is it that I have been to so many gaming stores, so many conventions, I've even been to White Wolf's own booth so many times, and until a couple days ago, I had never heard of Mind's Eye Theater.
But I have.
But you didn't know what it was.
Hey, Dan,
so?
Hey, Dan, do you think there's maybe some LARPer shame? I mean, there's role player shame. There's
but from the company itself. I mean, aren't they trying
to? The company itself is going to try to sell what's selling best. If what's selling best is a role playing rules versus the LARPing rules, I would expect them to try to push their role playing rules because they think you're more likely to buy that.
Maybe so, but come on. I mean, World of Darkness LARPing is kind of a big deal, and you would think that as I go to their booth or something. Unless I'm just completely blind, you would think that somewhere in that rack, okay, fair enough, they're going to have more copies of Vampire and Werewolf and the main New World of Darkness book and whatever. But you would think somewhere in that rack would be a stack of three or four Mind's Eye Theater books.
I think that tabletop role-playing games are standard. Now, there's tons of different ways to do it, but sitting down, character sheets, dice, you got your Doritos, whatever. It's a standard that the companies are trying to push forward. Whereas LARPing, Wayne made an excellent post on the forums. There's no
International Board of LARP.
Yeah, there's no International Board of LARP or anything. I think that you have tabletop role-playing games that some game designers say, hey, you know, this could lend itself to LARPing, this concept we've heard, and they put in rules to that. But when people LARP, I don't think that they go out to the local gaming store and buy the LARP book that teaches them how to LARP.
I wonder if they actually want to sell the regular book first and then expand to sell the LARP book later to get double the sales.
I don't think that LARP is really on the radar of a lot of these companies.
I think it's got to be. And here's why I say that. Within this hobby, and by this hobby I'm talking about tabletop role-playing games now, we love to proselytize. We love to evangelize. We love to tell people what it is we do. We love to tear down walls. Mm-hmm. We put out that episode 115, that a lot of people said they've been able to use to bring new people into the hobby. There are people like Wayne, my brother-in-law, Adam, various people who hated role-playing games or did not understand what they were, and we sat down.
For the record, I fall into not understanding, not the hating.
Right, and we sat down, explained to them what these games were, and now these are people either actively game or are at least open to the idea. So here I am.
Do you know that? I'm sorry to interrupt there, but
right.
Actually, no, I'm not.
No, you're not. You're not.
There's a guy on our forums who, this just reminded me, there's a guy on our forums who listens to our show, and he recently just said that he got his basically fundamentalist friend or relative who hates role-playing games and thinks they're evil listening to our show.
We've got people at work that don't care at all listening to the show just because the conversation's interesting to them.
Right. Yeah, but I mean,
but here's the thing. I'm throwing myself out there. I'm saying, you know, look, I have played LARPs before. I'm walking to these gaming stores. I am the prime candidate for someone to come along, as much as historically Fear the Boots made.
You want to buy fangs. Want to buy a cape.
Yeah, sure. As much as Fear the Boot has historically...
See, you're not ready to LARP yet.
No, I'm not. I think what you need...
Fangs and cape are out there, because I've seen and bought both.
Well, yeah.
You know what? You need a gateway drug. See, I don't think that LARPers go into gaming shops and buy the LARP book, because it doesn't exist, nor is anyone selling it to them. But I think that this is a market that needs to be done, because a person like you who wants to get into it, but you're not ready for the fangs and cape and makeup and Denny's, but you want to get more into it, you want to add more of that into your game, you need a gateway drug.
You need to know a guy and get an invitation.
But here's the point I keep trying to make. How is it in 3.5 years of being an eligible candidate, doing a podcast that's historically made fun of LARPing so much, there has never been someone who sat down and been like, this is what it is. Here's the products. Take a look at it.
Because there's no products.
I would disagree.
But there is.
That's
the thing. Yeah. There is. That's what I thought.
What?
The feedback. Mind's Eye Theater.
Yeah. That's it. Chaosium book. And I'm not talking.
But hang on. There's not many products, and there's no products are two very different statements.
Okay. Out of, yes, but 0.0001% of all the products out there, I can think of two. I don't mean free stuff that somebody puts on the internet.
Right. I'm talking about stuff support.
Saleable product. I can think of two. I can think of Mind's Eye Theater, which is not part of their main role-playing game stuff, and Chaosium's Call of Cthulhu, the last half of the book, not even the full book, like a section at the back of it. I think that LARPing is a concept that people pass between each other. You know a guy who says, hey, man, why don't you come out to this event in the park? Or, hey, we're doing this thing in my parents' house. They're gone for the weekend. Bring that cape you got at the Ren Faire. We'll do something cool. and a box of condoms.
I would be freaked out. I don't think I'd show up.
I think this is sounding...
No, but jokes aside, do you get what I'm saying? Is that I don't think that there is...
The free market
is not serving these interests. I think that it's a social community thing. I think that you have friends, a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who's into it and has a group.
Okay, I'll split the difference with you there. On some of that stuff, it was starting to sound a bit like a caricature. But on that last point, the free market's not serving this interest. All I can tell you is apparently not. Because here I am as a man who has spent over 20 years in this hobby in general, who has spent 3.5 years with some visibility, who hangs out with the guys from White Wolf, who gets review products from the guys at White Wolf, which is the biggest LARP group out there.
I think we've had Jess Hartley
on the show, and I have never heard of this stuff before.
I still think that it's... I think you hit it right there. It's LARP groups. It's not LARP products. Because we're coming at this from a tabletop role-playing mentality, where you hear about a game you like, you buy one of the books from a gaming shop, you crack it open, you read it.
And that's with a LARP, you can't be lugging a book around.
Yeah,
so
well,
it has to be a social behavior. From that angle, I follow what you're saying. It has to be a learned behavior. I hate to boil it down that way, because it sounds so terrible, but it has to be a learned behavior.
People aren't born knowing how to role play a LARP.
Yeah, I guess if you had a LARP, if you had accoutrements of a LARP outside of the costumes, it would make LARPing harder to do.
And Dan, if you type LARP into Google, the first hit is the live action role playing site, and look, here's a guy in a trench coat with a gun. It's not all boffer sparring and throwing tinfoil, going lightning bolt, lightning bolt, lightning bolt. You get guns. You love this. You should LARP.
Oh, I would, absolutely. If the right game came along, I couldn't do a vampire LARP, but if the right game came along, well, anyway, maybe I could. But
anything.
It would take a really careful approach to it. But let's move on from that. There is a topic we have considered kicking around on the show, and I've avoided it because I just presumed this was a topic that had no legs. It would go nowhere. We wouldn't have anything to say about it. Until this past Sunday, at our gaming group, I found myself wishing I had a micro recorder on me because we could have turned our Sunday discussion into an episode of this show, because we spent about an hour debating something I thought there was nothing to talk about with, the use of minis in a role-playing game. Right now, our role-playing game group is in a position where our previous game has just kind of faltered and fizzled.
Oh my God, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. No, I'm not sorry. But
no, you're not sorry at all.
The first recorded LARP in Australia was run in 1983 using the science fiction traveler setting.
Wow.
How do you LARP sci-fi? I really want to. That would be awesome. I mean, do you drive around in your car going, pew, pew, pew?
I don't know, man. I
know what you do. You dress up as Spock, and you go to a Renaissance fair. And you go to the Renaissance fair as Spock.
Have you seen
exploring a planet?
Have you seen
that
pictures?
Is similar to Earth, but different.
Have you seen the pictures of the Fallout LARP?
No, I have not.
I will.
Oh, wait. Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
I will link that from the show notes. I will link that from the show notes, because if you have not seen the pictures
of
the
Russian group.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's a Russian group. Like I said, it was not done here in America. But the costumes, the sets they did were unbelievable. You could probably do it in St. Louis, because we have a lot of rundown, abandoned industrial areas, but they're not the best parts of town. So the gun you take should probably be a real one that's loaded with real bullets, because you're going to need it. And the raider you shoot, it may not be part of the game and may really need to be put down.
The Wikipedia article says that today LARP is popular in North America, Europe, Russia, and Australia. Large games with thousands of participants are run by for-profit companies. Again, we're looking for books, when in reality we should be looking for organizations.
Well, but how can you have a for-profit company if it doesn't sell anything?
Because you pay a membership fee.
They provide various locations.
LARP, but it also says various LARP books are published, and an increasing professional industry sells costumes, armor with a U, and foam weapons intended primarily for LARP.
Well, anyways, getting back to the other topic, minis in a role-playing game. We were talking about what game we want to play next. And by the way, I can't believe we just stooped to researching Wikipedia in the middle of the show.
I like Wikipedia. But it's the McDonald's of knowledge.
Yeah,
it's great.
You know, someone on the forums asked us if after some of our last episodes, if we would love to ban phones from the game. I'm wondering if
Dan... from the podcast.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, no, knowledge. What? I can just whip it out at any moment.
Just ban it from Chad.
True.
Try it. I'm right here.
I wouldn't have to.
I'll take any comers.
I found a jammer.
Yeah, I know that.
Your phone just wouldn't work. But anyway, third false start on this topic. As we were sitting around talking about the next role-playing game we were going to play, one of the questions that was asked, because we were throwing around tons of different titles, homebrews, established games, new games, old games. I mean, we threw out tons of different titles, genres, and possibilities. And one of the conversation points that came up was whether the game should or should not, or if anyone had a strong preference about whether the game involved minis.
You know, and I've been curious about this for you guys for a long time, because for me coming in, I've only played in one game that actually used it. And it's one of those things, I don't know what everyone else thought about it. So I kept bringing it up, but it's a matter.
You made a point. We're approached from many angles because we had tons of opinions. And I'm, Chad, you and I are going to square off on this one.
Okay, my big thing is, when you come to combat in a game...
You had a great analogy.
Yeah, when you come to combat in a game, you're going along, you have story, story, story. Sometimes it feels like you're playing Final Fantasy when combat comes. Okay, roll initiative is essentially the same thing to me as the sound of the music starting in Final Fantasy.
Exactly, and I followed you completely, because if you're not playing a minis-heavy game, you're role-playing, you're imagining, you're talking, maybe talking in character, and then all of a sudden... You run into the troll, and it's like Final Fantasy. The plot ends, the screen shatters, or circled away, or whatever. The music completely changes.
In my mind, there's a flat board that gets created.
And now, all of a sudden, the imagination stops, and I'm not picturing anything. I just see minis on a playing field. And the imagination of role-playing stops until the combat ends.
That's why I was wondering if that was just me, or if it was you. No, that's why I brought it up on
too.
Sunday.
But that's not everybody, though. There are people who, you throw those minis out, it gives their mind something to a point of reference, and not just a tactical one. Obviously, tree is here, guy is there, enemy's there, but it gives their imagination a point of reference that they can build in their mind's eye with. So,
you know what I
understand
it to,
but it's not me.
What I would compare it to, following the anti-mini stance for a moment, and I hate to say anti-mini because... But you get my point.
You know, to me, it shouldn't come down to pro and con.
Because
they're both valid play styles, but I think that they are mutually exclusive.
Well, here's what I see a lot of advantages to minis, and I see a lot of drawbacks.
Let me give you the example. I went out and saw both, I guess there's two, there's been two so far, the Chronicles of Narnia movies.
Yeah, two.
Yes, two.
And I did not like them for one big reason. I am a huge fan of the books. But one of the things that I loved about C.S. Lewis, unlike his contemporary Tolkien, was C.S. Lewis is a man who knows how to trigger your imagination and to convey a lot in very little wording. For example, he might describe a feast as saying, well, it had this and this and this and all the other things you might expect at a big Christmas feast. Well, what do you expect at a big Christmas feast? Everyone's filling in a different image here. With the Chronicles of Narnia movie, suddenly everything... that he left to your imagination. He's only going to take you so far. Had to be spelled out perfectly because you have to show it. And for me, a lot of times, that's what minis do, where I have this imagination. And sometimes, truth be told, even stopping to roll initiative yanks me out of that. Another thing that does this to me is in movies, the moment somebody drops the Wilhelm scream, I am no longer in the movie. I'm sitting in a theater annoyed.
What's the Wilhelm scream?
It's a scream that is in every movie when somebody falls off a cliff or falls off a wall.
Yeah, it's one recording that was made years ago.
And for some reason,
it's over and over and over again.
It's become, directors feel like they are compelled or required by some unwritten law to incorporate it as an homage or a nod or something in every movie they do.
You may not have heard the term, but you will know the scream.
You know the scream. I'll play it for you later.
Yeah, look it up on Wikipedia there.
No, don't. But it's that
knowledge is power, Pat.
But it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, and we all know that there's, you know, everything that's on Wikipedia is true.
Hey, it's the McDonald's of knowledge.
Yeah, okay.
Oofty goofty climbing the dark tower.
That's right.
We merged those two articles several years ago.
Right. I mean, everything on Wikipedia is true. We're getting ready for Fear the Con 2.
Yes.
That's right.
And I think the dates on Fear the Con 1 were completely wrong. But anyway.
A note on that, our Fear the Boot Wikipedia article is so out of date because we really don't edit it ourselves.
You know, I have a very strong feeling about that. Anyone that has to edit their own Wikipedia article doesn't deserve to have a Wikipedia article.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just shameless egotism. It I mean, should it be a fan effort? I mean, you want accurate information in there, sure, but yeah, if you are editing your own Wikipedia article for your own show or your own blog or your own website, your own movie,
you should just have a Facebook company, page instead.
Yeah, have a Facebook page, because then it's just blatant advertising.
I have to say, when I went out there and saw my name included on it at one point, that was a big thrill for me. Mm-hmm. I'm semi-kind of almost a celebrity on the internet.
I'm going to come down on the pro-mini side for one big thing, consistency. And I'm going to break consistency down in two directions. Direction number one, I have played in a lot of games where there was simply confusion about what the setup was. Where exactly is somebody standing? Where exactly is the flipped over couch?
Oh, sure. There's definitely
wait a minute. You mean there's a wall? Oh, that column actually blocks my view. I was picturing something like this. And a map with minis where you have things set out and little guys standing in places, there's no confusion about who's standing where, what's going on, where the obstacles are. It guarantees perfect clarity in communication.
See, I don't think it's a bad thing not to have the clarity, though. I like coming up with the idea in my own mind. Yes, if you run into an issue, oh, there was a wall there, you just say, okay, I didn't know there was a wall there. Can we go back and do that over? Unless your GM is out to get you. And if your GM is out to get you, by all means, use minis, do measures, whatever.
Well, then it becomes
if your GM's out to get you, you're in the wrong group.
Well, and that was going to be my second point. Now, let me do a quick aside and say, Wayne, I agree with you that I think if you have a fair GM who's willing to say, wait a minute, this wasn't clear, or it was clear, but you didn't follow, we'll retcon a little bit. We'll let you change where you are or something. And I think you can do that without...
As long as the player doesn't keep doing it.
But I did have a game. It was a D&D game, and in D&D, I think squares are, 5 feet across or something like that. I don't know, without a book in front of me. But we had a problem, because with this one GM, every time a monster went to hit us, they were 4 feet and 11 inches away. The minute I went to ask for an attack of opportunity to swing back at the exact same monster, he was 5 foot and 1 inch away. It never freaking failed. And I believe this was in third edition, because we were trying to shorthand some of the combats without the map. And so we finally, as of third edition, said, you know what, we're going to the map, because it put an end to that crap. Because now all of a sudden, if he moves a monster here, we get our attacks of opportunity. I know where the monster is. There is consistency, not just to the explanation, but there is consistency to the execution of the rules. Something can't be standing in two places at once, or shifting places from turn to turn.
And I think that that isn't a problem with the minis or not minis, the pro or the con argument. It's a problem with your GMs out to get you.
Well, I completely agree with that. I mean, if I were running a game, every rule is going to fall in the player's favor. They may be fighting things tougher than them, but combat is, if you want it to be fun, you can't take the mindset of me versus them. You have to give them things.
Okay. In principle, I completely agree with you guys, but when, to bust out an old chestnut here, the rubber hits the road, sometimes it's easier just to say, let's take this to map, than it is to have the internal friend fight over you're being a dick.
True.
But ultimately, the guy is still a dick, even if you go to the map.
Oh, absolutely.
So like that I said, eventually has to be dealt with.
You don't want to end
Maybe you don't want to deal with that right then and there. So I understand.
I can come up with tons
that doesn't solve the problem.
I can come up with tons of half-truths and excuses for going to map that have nothing to do with attacking the guy's character. I cannot attack the guy's character without attacking the guy's character.
True. Very true.
Do you guys feel that RPGs nowadays, with certainly some titles becoming more and more mini-heavy, D&D certainly comes to mind as a great example here, where to play the game now, the rules don't just allow for minis, but they presuppose minis. You're told the range and blast radius and stuff of things, oftentimes in squares, as often as you are, and you have templates and such, and it just presupposes you're playing on a map. Do you feel that move is partially responsible for the push of some role-playing games into territory where they're starting to feel more like war games and less like RPGs?
I would say that's a fair assessment, and I somewhat agree with it. I think what it is basically you've got, it's all part of the industry. I mean, you know, starting way back when, you've got your big miniatures companies that sort of getting into bed with role-playing is a good thing because, hey,
you guys are doing this. We've got these miniatures that, hey, look, they're fantasy miniatures, whatever else. It's a great fit. So I think it's sort of a, you know, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours sort of a relationship possibly.
Yeah,
I think you do. Yeah, you do see a lot of that. I mean, yeah, all the templates and, you know, they tell you how things are laid out in squares, this, that, and the other.
I think they're doing for continued income, too.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, it is. It's the industry.
You only need one role-playing book, but you need 100 skeletons.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
You need the three beholders and the dragon.
Which
and
is the worst thing that I think that D&D did when they did the box sleeves of the randomized one. You buy a sleeve of minis, but you don't know what minis you're going to get. I'm sorry. If Sunday they're attacking skeletons and all I have are kobolds,
yeah.
Why do I want randomized minis? Mm. It's just marketing. It's
God
just
bless
marketing.
Reaper.
Yeah.
Every 99% of the miniatures I own or go out and seek always come from Reaper. Now, let me offer something else, though, that stands as a kind of middle step between pure...
Would it be like a Venn diagram, sort of?
No.
We're busting out rubber meets the road, man. And you might as well bust out the Venn diagram.
Okay, fine. If we did a Venn diagram of maybe on one extreme, you have... the miniature war game with role-playing elements, D&D 4.0. On the other circle, you have people who don't want any maps at all. That the moment you bust out the maps, and something else that came up in our discussion was setup time. This was also part of the Final Fantasy, the screen shatters, the setting changes. Because we're role-playing along, we've got the subscription, we're all in character, and then we have to stop for 15, 20 minutes to put out the map, to draw the room, to put out the obstacles, to position the monsters. Okay, Chad, where are you standing? Okay, Wayne, where are you standing? Okay, Pat. And there's this real yank from reality. But there's a middle step where these two overlap, where if you say, on one hand, I cannot stand any of this interruption of the RP, but on the other hand, you have somebody who wants that consistency. Something we have done in a few of our role-playing games, sort of a shorthand method, where there's no squares, there's no templates. We're not measuring out feet or meters or whatever your game calls for. But what I might do real quick is just take a piece of notebook paper and real quick doodle out, all right, wait a minute. Just so you're clear, here's the hallway, here's the cross section, here's the computer terminal you guys are trying to get to, and I put down three models, or maybe even three D6s, or three pencil Xs, or something, to say, this is where the guards are. What exactly are you guys doing? And people put down their minis, or their dice, or whatever we're using. And each round, we're not real exact, but you kind of move them around just so there is some visual reference of what may be a confusing and shifting battlefield.
In my case, once the battle starts, even doing that, I think I'm pulled out of it a little bit. When you're looking at the minis, in my mind, I see my character running to the left, running to the right, but I can't help but see the mini or the dice sitting there, and I see, okay, my character's standing there because he's not doing anything right now.
Yeah,
he won't until next round. He's going to stand there. Oh, that guy just ran right by me because he had higher initiative. I know that I could in my mind picture, okay, he's actually spinning around me or jumping over me or something, but it's hard to do when you're actually staring at something.
You've touched on a larger topic, and this is something that we talked about as well, but the whole point of it's not just that when you get into combat, the pause and break from reality is to stop and set up. It's then going into the combat itself, because you've gone from real-time role-playing before combat, you know, interacting with everybody at the table. Once you get to the point where you are then into an encounter of any sort, like a combat, you are then jumping out of real-time and into something that is more representative, because, like you said, a round is representative in most game systems of a few seconds, maybe 5 to 10 seconds. But a round is going around the table and doing it. So a round of combat might take physical time of, you know, 10, 15 minutes to play out. So it's not just that you've got miniatures. If you had no miniatures and you were doing it from, you know, just with nothing, you still got the mechanic. I mean, and that's the mechanics of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got, that's
gonna
the whole
be there
point.
Whether you have
a game system, any game system has some form of conflict resolution. And when you start using that mechanic, you have jumped out of real time. You've got to resolve things, and so there you go. So it's not just minis. Of course, that is part of it, but it's not the, I don't think it's the only thing.
I don't know if it would work or not, but what I'd like to see is when it comes to combat, you go around the table, He's like, okay, what is your character going to do? What is your character going to do? What is your character? Comes back to the GM. He knows everyone's initiatives, and then he describes the combat. If it's a 5-second period, for example, if it's a 2-second period, this is what happens during the period. This arrow goes flying here while this person runs under. You'd have to have a GM that's really good at narrative to do that. But I think it would be a more interesting combat.
Now
then.
You're talking about them hippie narrative indie games.
Personally, no, not necessarily. Because even in BattleTech, for example, you certainly had turns and initiative and such.
It was all simultaneous.
Well, yeah. First of all, it was assumed all be simultaneous. And secondly, if you play BattleTech right, and we almost never played it this way because we didn't want to do the paperwork. After you move, you take turns moving. So team A, team B, team A, team B, team A, team B, until everyone's moved. Everybody declares their weapons fire before a single die is rolled. You know, I'm going to shoot 2 PPCs at this guy and a medium laser at this guy. And in truth, the first PPC may destroy him, the second is just a wasted shot. But you declare it, and then it's all rolled out all at once. But I follow, Pat, what you're saying, which may be a completely, well, it is a completely different topic, which is the fact that combat is structured so differently in roleplay, because in roleplay, it's free form. You can jump in at any moment, say something, do something. It's very organic in the way it flows. But combat suddenly becomes broken into rounds. A guy goes running past you, and you just stand there frozen as a statue because it's not your turn.
Yeah.
And we once did, and we'll just keep picking on BattleTech. You could do this with any role-playing game, though. We once did a BattleTech combat that took us like 4 or 6 hours to resolve, and I had a piece of paper where I was tracking an issue from turn to turn, so I had a running tally of the number of turns, and after it was over, I sat down and totaled it up. I'm like, do you guys realize about 90 seconds of your life just passed?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
This combat took either something like 90 or 120 seconds passed, and it took like 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah.
Now, certainly, BattleTech being a tactical game takes a whole lot longer to resolve than a typical combat in any other game.
It's not. BattleTech, pure and simple, is not a role-playing
game. But let's take any game. Let's take even D&D 4th edition.
Do we have to?
No, but we're going to. But let's say you take D&D 4th edition, and we still have the same thing. If we're sitting in the tavern role-playing, which is generally, well, that's the only place you're allowed to role-play in 4th edition. They forbid it specifically outside. but if so, if you...
I can hear it now. Why all the 4E hate? Why all the 4E hate? Because we're done hating on 3.0. That's not around anymore.
3.5.
Well, and we're done hating on 3.5.
Am I allowed to hate 4 because I've never played it?
Yeah. No, dude.
You're required to.
You're required to. We didn't hate on 2.0 because the show wasn't around for 2.0. Exactly.
I had no beef with 3 or 3.5, but different hour, different time.
Does that imply something?
Point being, take any game you want. Any game that has a typical initiative round. I'm sure somebody out there is going to whip out their obscure title, or maybe even not so obscure title.
There's lots of games that don't have an initiative.
Something a little bit more experimental. But generally speaking, the vast majority of role-playing games out there, some kind of an initiative round. And it is oftentimes, for me, very jarring because of the fact that we've gone from this organic, do-what-you-want-when-you-want system to now it's more like XCOM, or Age of Wonders, or something like that, or Final Fantasy Tactics, where everybody is standing stock still on the field, or marching in place, or something ridiculous, until it's their turn, at which point suddenly they come to life like a mannequin in a bad 80s movie, and take a few gunshots and say something, then go back into being a mannequin.
This is why I don't like combat and role-playing games. Not because there's anything inherently... Well, actually, I hate combat for 2 reasons. One, in role-playing games, it turns all the characters into murderers. And that is the push of the majority of role-playing games out there. The majority of the rules are you're killing, you're murdering, and I'm going to be so bold to say,
I don't think, for my years of role-playing with you, in truth, you dislike combat and role-playing games. I think you hate what it's come to represent.
What do you mean?
I can remember times in games where you have been very into the combat. There have been very dramatic moments. Years ago, the fight between your paladin and his uncle comes to mind. There have been these very dramatic moments where you were more into the combat than you were the RP prior to and after the combat. I think from everything I hear you say, what you've come to resent is the fact that too many RPGs are all about the combat now.
You know, I would even go more recently than our last Guys of Glass game.
10 pages of setting, 100 pages of equipment, 200 pages of rules on how to kill people, 2 pages on how to ride a horse, and then another 50 pages on spells on how to incinerate, burn, melt, or destroy another human being.
Listen, in our recent Skies of Glass game, you seem to get into the combat. And I have to say, during that, it never once felt Final Fantasy to me.
Right. Because of
the
way,
yeah, it flowed. It didn't seem like, okay, stop.
And I was playing a murderer. In that game. I was playing a very bad person. You guys were playing very moral good people, but yeah, I was playing a bad person.
All right, so let's end this then on a quick vote. You can vote one of three ways. Minis, not at all. Yes, but only as shorthand representation for consistency's sake. Or yes, and in a tactical type setting.
Like, do we get to explain our selection?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to cut with the middle one of I prefer them for consistency's sake because I think they help to explain complex situations and flowing battlefields. As a GM, I found them very useful. Let me stress, though, I personally do not mind any of the three forms. I will happily play in a game that has tactical minis, I will happily play in a game that has no minis, and I will play in a game that has shorthand minis. But of the three, my personal preference is the middle option of we have minis, but we mostly use them just to keep track of confusing situations. Pat?
I like miniatures in role-playing game. I believe that they are
full-blown squares and
well, for me, from the beginning of my role-playing experience, miniatures have been an integral part of that experience. So, yes, I played with them that way. So I fall more toward to the one extreme of I want to have the miniatures on the table with the, you know, terrain and everything like that so that you can see what's going on and have the discrepancy. But I'm also like you, I will play in any of the three, but I fall more to the more regimented. And my reasoning is this. Simply stated, and you say that you want to do the more free form and that in your mind's eye and use your imagination where you say, okay, you're on the field and all of a sudden 30 guys come out of the woods. Now you're fighting them. Okay, I can sit there and I can think, okay, 30 guys. Okay, I've got some kind of an idea of what that is. But until you actually sit your miniature on the table and then put 30 miniatures right there,
but you know, Pat,
I don't think you have a tangible feeling of
what if you do not own sufficient or sufficiently accurate minis.
And I will say this, I was blessed. My GMs were miniature painter freaks. They painted as quickly as they could get to it. So they had hundreds of miniatures.
To counterpoint what you're saying, and this whole conversation came up from a small part of a conversation that we had with our gaming group on Sunday. And what that was is one of the combats we had, we were attacked by 30 ninjas. They were not represented by ninjas because our GM, our miniature, not our GM, but our the guy whose house we play at is miniature guy. He's super painter guy. He has tons of minis for tons of different games, plastic, metal, whatever. He's won awards for painting. Great guy. Love him to death. He does not have 30 ninjas.
Sure.
So we were attacked by 30 elf guys with bows. Okay. And another 100,000 miniatures of chicks with staves and a couple more guys with swords. Suffice to say, there wasn't a single ninja on the field. Yeah, it was all representative.
And that may be close enough, but I guess for me what would become more jarring is when suddenly the guy you're playing with doesn't have a beholder, so you're being attacked by the knight from a chess set, and I'm supposed to picture that as a beholder.
Yeah.
Wayne, what about you? Where do you fall?
Okay, again, like you guys, I'm willing to play in pretty much anything. For me, I do see advantages to having minis. It is nice to be able to say, okay, this is where everything is on the table. But to be honest, again, it is like Final Fantasy for me. When the miniatures come out, I'm back on a flat playing board. That can be worked with. If someone's a good enough GM running, really trying to, I think we could completely get around it. But for me, I have to say I fall on the no miniature side.
Champ?
I think that more role-playing needs to be added to combat. And if you say that your group has a lot of role-playing in your combat, my answer is add more role-playing into combat. And metal is not role-playing.
So you're on the no-mini side.
I see their usefulness, and this was in the argument Sunday. I brought this point up, too. It's like, I've been gaming since I was 14, 15 years old with multiple different groups, and I've done minis, I've done no-minis, I've done chess pieces just to say, I've lost this in my mind. Okay, you're here, he's here, they're there. Okay, cool, but then that's all. You don't ever touch them again. And
that's my preferred method of just throwing things down real quick.
To me, that's fine. If there's a question, you know, I don't have a problem with that. So I can do any of them. I prefer none of it because you stop. And this is my problem with combat in general, not just with minis. You're role-playing. Everybody stop role-playing. Let's start rolling dice. Initiative. Set up minis. Start checking your character sheet. What spells do I have? What abilities do I have? What are my guns? What are my bullets? And start doing the mechanics. And sure, you can add role-playing elements into that, but you're combining the two. And the role-playing games, to me, are three things. You're picking a role that you normally wouldn't. You're playing, which is like the role-playing aspect of it. And then there's a game aspect, which is the mechanical, what did you call it? Conflict resolution mechanic is what you said. And that's fine. It's just to me that the role and the play flow in really well together and come to a screeching laying 80 feet of rubber along the road when you get to the game part, and then you kind of go back into it.
Do you feel limited by the game part once you get that point?
God, I do. I'm more than limited. I'm bored.
This is just a point where you and I differ a lot on that. And I guess this is really another topic, but I just look at, you know, combat as it's part of role playing, and I actually enjoy it.
Well,
I enjoy combat and getting into situations like that. Hell, I even enjoy dungeon crawls and that kind of thing.
The same thing like tabletop warfare games. Where, like War Machine or something.
Yeah, I don't think it goes that far.
No, it doesn't. But here's my point that I'm trying to make. In that, in tabletop miniatures game, the miniature people always say that the assembling the models and painting them, the modeling aspect, is as much part of the game as actually putting the models on the field, rolling dice, and doing the combat. Well, I love tabletop miniatures games. I absolutely love them. Mm. I hate modeling. I suck at painting. I don't have the patience to put a model together. And all that. So that part doesn't interest me. So, yes, I'm missing out on half the game. Fun doesn't exist for me. Same thing in a role-playing game.
That leads to the question I've always wanted to ask you, Chad. You do love the tabletop the tabletop miniatures games. Mm-hmm. Why is it that you don't like combat and role-playing games when it's similar to that? What is it about the tabletop miniature game that you have no problem with that same mechanics?
There's no role-playing in a tabletop miniatures game.
So why can't... I'm with you on this, Wayne.
Because I was.
Why can't you combine role playing and like tabletop?
Because if I was
games,
in the
why
middle,
why can't you have both?
If I was in the middle of my turn in a tabletop miniatures warfare game, and somebody said, "Stop! Don't move! RP that out," I'd be like, "Huh? No, I want to finish my move. I want to do my thing."
I see what you're saying. It interrupts your role playing.
Whereas I am role playing with Dan, I'm role playing with you, I'm role playing with Pam, I'm role playing with Mooney and Dave, and we're all going back and forth.
I think this has been here since the beginning of role playing.
It has been.
So, I don't deny that.
I think this is what
I mean. Just because it is, does that mean I have to enjoy it? I think that that's the weakest part of role playing. But you know what? Well, that's exactly it. Your response there. Well, okay. That is the response. I can't do anything about it. I can't go back in time and kneecap Gary Gygax and tell him to take the combat out of role-playing.
Well,
it ain't going to happen.
I think, first of all, we're hedging into another discussion.
I want to have this discussion in another episode. I've been pushing this one for a while. I want to have the discussion at some point of how do you make combat fun?
Well, more than fun, I follow Chad's argument, even though I don't necessarily agree with it, because it doesn't bother me nearly as much as it bothers him.
This is actually the first time I've understood his argument.
No, I've understood it for a while, that combat is a sudden shift in the nature and flow of a role-playing game. You role-play.
Some people like it.
And then you combat. And combat and role-play. Yeah. Now, I think, however, and I agree with you that the role-playing industry, at least in the mainstream, and I know somebody's going to whip out their indie title or whatever, but...
The exception that proves the rule.
At least in the mainstream, nobody has bothered trying to find a way to make combat more organic with the role-playing scenes.
Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to do mechanics.
But I think there are ways you can address it, but that's a different subject for a different show. Whether it's the next show or 100 shows from now, that's a different subject for a different show. So it sounds like, at least with the four people around the table, Chris being too old to make this episode, that we have... One not at all. Wayne, I guess you were on the not at all.
I was very much on the
not. That's the full tactical, and I was right in the middle.
People are going to hate me because first I take away their GM screens. Now I'm trying to take away their minis. Man.
Just because it's always been done doesn't
matter.
Basically, well,
before it's all over with Chad, it's going to be this. He's going to basically go into a meditative trance by himself and just think about something, you know, about role playing. No, nobody else has to be there. He'll just think of a whole game himself for like an hour or two, and then he'll wake up out of his little trance and he'll be like, "Man, that was a great game, Chad." Yeah, I agree, Chad.
I have no
Fantastic.
Idea where you're going.
All right, so thank you.
I don't get it.
I do. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Later days.
See ya.
I know.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.